Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on October 26, 2020, from my home studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features the voices of voters from around the state, the latest on how South Carolina ranks with domestic violence deaths, and what has victims' advocates worried. We pour through the latest unemployment data, give you tips on having a safe Halloween, and hear about how important getting the flu vaccine is for this winter. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's happening in your world. You can tell us if you voted absentee or in person. Are you going to vote on election day? How do you feel about the whole process so far? Tell us, 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control data. There have been 3,587 deaths, 410 of those alone in the past 30 days. And currently, there are 163,946 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of October 26 at 4 p.m. And just so you know, our death rate has increased 53% over the past 7 days. Currently in the state, the number of folks in intensive care with COVID-19 is 201. And just for some perspective, that's roughly half of what we are seeing on any given day in July, which was one of our worst months. Just some perspective there. And right now, 93 people are currently on ventilators. Our percent positive rate is 12.3%, and so far it's been averaging about 10.8% this month. Gotta get it under 5%. Also, let's stop normalizing unnecessary death. I'm going to kick off our politics section with a collaborative report on absentee voting by myself and my fellow public radio co-workers. The effort was spearheaded by reporter Victoria Hansen, who is based in Charleston.
The state is already setting records for absentee or early voting, and the Election Commission estimates more than 1 million absentee ballots could be cast in South Carolina. From the presidential election to a heated U.S. Senate race, and a Democratic incumbent trying to hold on to a recently flipped 1st Congressional District seat, we have a look at early voting from the upstate to the lowcountry, beginning in our state's capital.
I'm Tut Underwood in Columbia. It's a beautiful October day in the capital city, and an orderly and expectant group of people is lined up outside the Richland County Administration Building to vote. Kirby Fogel just finished and is now waiting in line with his mother, whom he met there by coincidence. He said he enjoyed the process of early voting.
It ran very smoothly. The people were really polite, really nice. They helped me out, answered every question I had. It was a great experience.
All the voters are wearing masks and keeping a polite distance from each other, which makes Richard Chesley wonder if the COVID-19 pandemic will affect the election at all.
I don't know. It doesn't seem right now it is, and people are keeping their mask on and social distancing, which I think is terrific, so we'll see. But from what I've seen nationally, there's a lot going on. People are out voting. There seems to be record numbers, so I think that's great. So it may not.
I'm Scott Morgan in Chester. There's a busy city smack in the middle of this otherwise rural county, and it makes for a sharp line among voters. The center of Chester County and its four urban voter precincts are overwhelmingly Black. The precincts around it are overwhelmingly white. And apathy among predominantly Democratic voters of color in 2016 led to Donald Trump becoming the first Republican presidential candidate to win more than 50% of Chester County's vote since the Reconstruction. But this time around, voters of color are engaged. Even on a Wednesday morning, Black voters line up to drop off absentee ballots in person. City resident Terry Lynn.
Everybody want to get the vote in, you know, if and buts about it, you know.
Some voters worry that absentee ballots might get questioned or even not counted. City resident Mary Robinson is not among them.
My part is to come out here and vote and don't worry about the rest.
I'm Gavin Jackson in Anderson. The South Carolina Senate race is the closest statewide race in decades. one that has Senator Lindsey Graham in the political fight of his life. The same issues driving tight polling and record-breaking fundraising by his opponent Jamie Harrison are the issues Graham hopes will secure him stronger conservative support and a fourth term, his close alliance with President Donald Trump, and his push to confirm conservative judges. But many previous Graham voters in this ultra-conservative part of the state have had enough of him, like Patrick Daniels.
Right out of his mouth, what he said, used these words against me. And I did. I used these words against him. I used his words against him.
While losing some moderate voters, he's attracting voters like Vietnam veteran Arthur Jones.
4 or 6 years ago, I probably said I wouldn't have voted for him, but he's come around to fight for our country.
And I'm Victoria Hansen, just outside Charleston, where the parking lot is full as a line wraps around Mount Pleasant Seacoast Church. Voters here are well aware of the 1st Congressional District race, where Republicans want to take back the seat. But it is the presidential race that has the attention of voters like Russell.
If we don't keep President Trump, we're headed toward a socialist company. It's obvious that that's exactly where the Democrats are trying to take us.
Voter Prayer Lizzie also feels this race is important.
I feel like I'm voting not just for myself, but for my, you know, future kids and nieces and nephews, anyone that I love that, you know, is in danger of losing things that they love. And
so many voting early during a pandemic, counting on the lines being even longer come Election Day.
Thanks, Victoria and crew. Moving on, we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss the scourge of domestic violence during Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Recently, my coworkers here at SCETV put together an informative episode of Palmetto Scene about this persistent problem that still has South Carolina as one of the worst states in the country. We'll start off with SCETV's Desiree Cheeks, who went to the silent witness ceremony at the State House, where family members of those killed by domestic abusers remember those lost the year before. Desiree also spoke with Attorney General Alan Wilson, whose office puts on the annual event.
It's a sunny yet solemn day here on the grounds of the State House as we gather to honor lives lost to domestic violence in our state. Currently, South Carolina ranks 6th in the nation for the amount of homicides caused by domestic violence. Each year in October, the Attorney General hosts a silent witness ceremony to honor the victims from the preceding year.
I want you to know that you are not alone in your pain. You are not alone in your grief. You are not alone because we are all here with you. I want to.
The COVID pandemic has affected every facet of life, and the crime is no exclusion or exception to that fact. Obviously, when people are isolated and people are under stress and there are exacerbating factors that can affect that home dynamic, you're going to obviously see a spike or the potential for a spike in those types of domestic abuse situations occur. And, you know, obviously this year's statistics will not be reflected until next year, because we're talking about 2019, the pre-pandemic. So we don't quite yet know how the pandemic is going to affect those types of crimes. And I think it's important that the families of those people who lost their lives to domestic violence, homicide, know that they are not alone. They feel alone at times, but they're not alone. There's an entire community of people out there, whether it's victim service providers, prosecutors, law enforcement officials. Every facet of South Carolina is behind these families, and we want them to know that. We want them to know that they're not alone and we have their back.
During the ceremony, wooden silhouettes represent the women and men who have died due to domestic violence in South Carolina during the previous year.
Palmetto Scene host Beryl Dakers spoke with Sarah Barber of Skadvasa, friend of the pod, about domestic abuse in the state and how it's been affected by the pandemic.
We know that when people are sheltered in place, that often means that they're with an abuser and that violence can continue and that it's harder for them to reach out for help when they aren't going to work or their kids are home from school. It becomes very difficult to find those precious few minutes that you might need to call and ask someone for assistance.
South Carolina has the unenviable history of generally being in the top 10 among all states in terms of the numbers of domestic violence cases. This year, as we saw at the silent witness ceremony, have we seen a slight improvement?
Well, this year in the data reported by the Violence Policy Center of women killed by men, we actually slipped to number 11, and that is South Carolina's best showing in that report. I would like everybody, though, to be very guarded in what that means. 1 year of data does not change a pattern of 2 decades. And if we look at the SLED crime report from last year, we'll see that we had more homicides related to intimate partner violence. So what we do know is, although we had a good year showing in the data this year, tragic as those numbers and each and every life involved in that report is, next year may look very different. So we still have to be very vigilant, and we have a lot of work still to do here.
What has been the real impact of the virus, if any, on domestic violence in our state?
Well, I think we've seen numbers rise during the initial part of the pandemic when people were in quarantine. Reports to police went down, but now they're higher than they were this time last year. We're seeing that in the immediate part of the pandemic, the calls to our member organizations and requests for service decreased. And we don't know whether that was if people couldn't find a way to call, if they just assumed that services were closed. So our member organizations have stayed open. Those hotlines are open 24/7, and people will find shelter for you if you need assistance. And that might not be in a traditional shelter. It might be in a hotel or some other kind of safe housing. But those services are available. And the other services they offer too, whether that be counseling, that can be done remotely. We still have legal services and can help people find an attorney. So all those services are still available. So we really urge people, if you need help, if you don't feel safe, please reach out and call, and somebody will be able to help you find a way to safety and healing.
You can watch Palmetto Scene Thursdays at 8 p.m. on SCETV. And you can watch the full episode on youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. Also, mark your calendars now. I want you to join me on election night when the polls close at 7 p.m. on SCETV. I'll be joined by several guests, and we'll have reporters in the field. Our program will be an hour long, and I'll continue to provide updates throughout the PBS NewsHour's coverage that night. I want to lead off our business section by updating you on unemployment data. Our September unemployment rate dropped to 5.1% from the revised 6.4% in August, according to the South Carolina Department of Employment and Workforce. So the declining trend continues. However, we know that a lot of this has to do with folks leaving the labor force. But jobs are slowly returning. When we look at leisure and hospitality, we saw 8,200 jobs added from August to September. That's great news. But comparing year-over-year unemployment in the industry, it's still down 17%. So a lot of work still needs to be done there for one of our biggest industries. Unemployment was down in all 46 counties from August to September. Marlboro County had the highest rate at 8.2%. Still high, like I said, but encouraging because that's down 2.7 points from the month before. Again, good news there. But when you look over year, it's still well above the 3.2% unemployment rate we saw last September. And this is the case for all the counties, though some are faring better than others. DEW Director Dan Elzey said businesses have an urgent need for workers, and that while a lot suffered layoffs during the pandemic, industries have ramped back up, and several are experiencing a boom. You can find jobs at jobs.scworks.org. And if you're in the healthcare industry, I tell you, there are a lot out there. I was perusing them. Whew, open bidding. Now, our initial unemployment claims also reached a new low for the week of October 11th, with 3,619 South Carolinians seeking benefits, and 70,120 individuals are still receiving benefits as of October 3rd. So how much has all this cost? Good question. Since March, the state alone has paid out over $1 billion in unemployment insurance benefits, which was basically our entire unemployment trust fund. Now, you may remember that lawmakers have shored that up with hundreds of millions of dollars from the CARES Act so as not to have business owners replenish it with fees in the future. Add in the federal pandemic benefits, and the total number of money paid out jumps to $4.4 billion, which helps folks on unemployment as well as keeping our economy juiced. DHEC has a great link on its website about how to celebrate Halloween safely from costume parties to actual trick-or-treating, if people still do that. Now, for costume masks, DHEC says don't use one as a substitute to your face mask unless it's made of two or more layers. While at the same time, don't wear a costume mask over a cloth one because it can become hard to breathe. So the lead says, forgo costume masks, folks. Instead, get a spooky theme mask and use makeup to match your face to its theme. Pro tip. Now, trick-or-treating can be done safely if you wear your face mask and socially distance, like everything, but wait for folks to leave a house before approaching it. If you're giving out candy, don't let a bunch of already grimy hands plunge into the same candy bowl. Use tongs to distribute candy and wear a mask. Also, wash your hands frequently. Lead says, get a PVC pipe and make a candy chute. Now, Halloween parties involving people outside of your household are discouraged. If you do have one, keep it small and with only immediate family members. Outside parties are a better idea. Just stay off my lawn and 6 feet away from folks. Everyone should have masks on at your party. I mean, it is a Halloween party. And avoid buffet-style eating. This is not a cruise ship. Lead says, always party responsibly. And Lead says, we're moving on. We know the seasonal flu is already a pain and can be deadly for thousands. With the threat of creating a twindemic, the best way you can help out is by getting the flu vaccine. Bobby Connor talks with Dr. Scott Curry about the seasonal flu and the vaccine this year. Dr. Curry is an assistant professor of infectious diseases and an epidemiologist at MUSC. Bobby opens by asking Dr. Curry about the increased importance of getting the flu shot this year.
Well, certainly at the individual level, you don't want to get the flu. It's a mean, nasty illness that puts most people in bed for a week, and you'll lose work as a result. At the community level, though, we fill our hospitals in the wintertime and late fall with influenza patients, and anything we can do not to fill our hospitals with those same patients is going to be of benefit to us when we're facing the possibility of what we're calling a twindemic, which is a surge of COVID patients at the same time we experience our seasonal winter flu hospitalizations.
And who is the flu vaccine recommended for, and when's the best time to get the vaccine?
As far as those who are advised to get it, it's almost everyone over the age of 6 months. There are a few exceptions that you can speak with your physician about. As far as timing, it's as soon as you can get it. We're late enough already in the season now. If you can get it, because the longer you delay, the less protection you have in a high incidence month, which is coming up on November.
Why do people over the age of 65 receive a higher dose flu shot?
Those who are in the older age brackets, particularly north of age 65, have a harder time responding to the standard doses of flu vaccine that exist. The high-dose flu vaccines are 4 times the dose of the standard and provoke a better immune response in that age group. And those are the folks most at risk to become hospitalized with influenza. So it's kind of a double-edged benefit to them.
And how long after receiving the flu shot does protection kick in?
2 weeks.
Do we know how effective this year's flu vaccine will be, or what strains of seasonal flu it will protect against?
So every year's flu vaccine is based on what we see in the southern hemisphere in their wintertime, which is corresponding with our summer. So we never quite know if it's going to be an exact match to the flu strains that are going to circulate this winter. We only know that after the fact, but our best guesses always come from that. Almost all U.S. flu vaccines will have 4 different strains of flu, 2A and 2B.
Is there anything new this year related to the flu vaccine?
Yes, we have some options for those who are really averse to shots. The live inactivated flu virus nasal spray vaccines are back. They were gone for a few years because of effectiveness data didn't show they worked as well, but we have solved some of those problems and those vaccines are available for some populations. We also have new formulations of the flu vaccine that are appropriate for those who have very serious egg allergies. That's an issue because the flu vaccine is grown in chicken eggs and those are available.
Tell us about some of the new adaptations for getting the flu shot in our communities due to the pandemic this year.
In many parts of South Carolina, health systems or commercial pharmacies or both are preparing drive-through or drive-up vaccination clinics, which will solve some of the issues with close indoor crowding in medical clinics that, of course, raise the potential to spread all respiratory viruses, including COVID. So you should definitely ask your local physician, is that available in your community? And if it is, it'd be a great option for getting the influenza vaccine this season.
And Lead says that just because it's a flu vaccine does not mean it's a COVID vaccine. aka whenever we get the COVID vaccine, you'll need to take that and also have your flu shot. So that's how that works, folks. Two vaccines. Again, more great info from Bobby Connor there with Health Focus. You can find that report and others on SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We talk about life during the pandemic and want to hear your stories as well. Tell us how you're handling things. If you've contracted COVID-19, what your experience was like, if you're working through the unemployment system or still employed, let us know at 803-563-7169. Leave us a message with your name and where you're calling from, and no longer than 3 minutes describing what's going on in your world. E.T., tell me about the world of our voicemails.
Well, let me check. No, none. We have none. We finally ran out.
It's like I want to hear like a water drop or like a pin drop. Like, well,
I got crickets. You want crickets?
Yeah, I'll put some crickets in there.
Okay, crickets. Do we have any?
Do we have any spooky crickets?
We got nothing going on then. I mean, what that just means we get to talk for 10 minutes uninterrupted.
Yeah. Okay, I can talk.
This is what you people get when you don't call in. So,
and immediately everyone cuts out.
Yeah, now we're going to get 1,000 voicemails overnight because they're going to be like, I don't want to hear this mess, whatever. But Gavin, you stayed up all night watching scary movies yesterday, right?
Yeah, my parents were out of town, so I got to watch scary movies all night, drink soda. And
I drank soda chips. After the sun went down.
And by soda, I mean scotch, and was watching some scary movies because I needed a break on Saturday. Was it Saturday? It was Saturday. I went to the Trump rally up in Lumberton, which required me to leave my home at 3 a.m. to get there by 5.
Brutal.
For the preset.
Yeah.
That's what goes into place, folks. You have to go put your tripod up on the riser. There's a security sweep.
Bomb sniffing dogs.
You got to get there at 5 for a 12:30 rally. That's how it works. Not complaining, just letting you know how the biz works, folks. A little biz behind the scenes.
That's some inside info, baby. Daddy-o.
It was a great rally. We'll have some of that for you in our trail bite this week. So then I got back. I got back into town. I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a break. I've had a long day. I'm going to have a long weekend on Sunday and the rest of this week. So I'm going to watch some movies. Since I have all these logins now, I have like basically every streaming service, thanks to my brother and you know, they have a family, they have the cable and all of them, Stars, Showtime, and all that stuff. I was like, all right, but you get all these.
You have a glut of passwords.
I do. And then you get these, but then they're still not as much as you want. You know, you're never satisfied.
There's a severe lack of spook.
So I watched at least 4 movies. There might have been another one or two, but I might have blacked it out.
Let's hit them.
I'm going to start with the worst first, and that was Hellraiser.
Yeah, Hellraiser is a bad movie.
I had never seen it. I've seen like one of the sequels, and it's just... it's gruesome. It's not something you're going to want to watch.
It's the same as Hellraiser.
And also, there's just no plot. And
no.
You're left with more questions than answers.
I've said before, and I'll say it again, that movie just got along on visuals for a really long time. Because you can't deny that just like the picture of Hellraiser,
that's a lot
he
of
looks
work.
Cool. The pinhead, you know? Like,
terrified
he looks
me.
Cool.
We were brief aside, video rental stores we were talking about. I just remember, don't you remember as a kid when you'd walk past some of those movies and you'd see the box and you're just like, ooh, like
Blockbuster,
that. I mean,
and you'd be like, oh,
you get these,
Dad
like,
won't let me get that.
You get these inadvertent nightmares just by like being in the presence of some of these movies, you know? Kids don't even know that these days unless they go to like the horror section of like Netflix. But I'm sure there's not even spooky covers for horror movies anymore, you know? It's all like happy.
It's not even about that. Okay, next worst.
Next worst, this will be, I'm going to say The Book of Blood. It was on Amazon. Oh, no, it was on Hulu. So it was on Hulu. It's a good one. It's like multiple intersecting stories. So it's a little bit of a
Hellraiser
Tarantino.
So was the only bad one.
Really bad one, yeah. That was just...
okay, so Book of Blood is the
Hulu.
Second worst, but still good.
Yeah, it's decent. It's worth a watch. You were guessing the whole time, folks. It's very cool.
Edge your seat.
Yes, and I don't even really... I can't even explain it because it's just weird.
But let's not dig then. It. Next one.
Fourth Kind. Fourth Kind.
I've been wanting to see this one for a long time.
Your little
so
alien
your
abduction. Yeah, your little alien abduction movie with a little bit of a found footage effect type thing.
Yes.
Set in Alaska, Nome, Alaska, but we did some research and it was actually filmed in Bulgaria. You're never going to tell the difference because, I mean,
they're both bleak.
I mean, I know my Eastern European cities and countries pretty
you
good.
You spotted so. It immediately.
Oh, I was like, my God.
This is Bulgaria. yeah, I want to see this Mila Jovovich movie. I wanted to see this. It got panned. I'm glad that you're saying it's good.
And I mean, I'll tell you this, that it is, you know, we were reading some of the reviews and the folks up in Alaska, the Anchorage Daily News, was just slamming it because it was, you know, filmed in Bulgaria and all these other things. And there, it's just so loose. But it is, if I just watched Mothman Prophecies for the first time in a few years, you really need to pace that one out.
That's a bad movie.
It had a little bit of a similar vibe there. Not as bad, but also trying to make it seem real.
Richard Gere. I just don't buy Richard Gere.
Yeah.
I don't like that guy. Hot take. Richard Gere, he could suck an egg and get lost. Best movie that you watched
over the weekend was The Omen. The original Omen.
I mean,
Damien, Gregory Peck, right? Gregory Peck's in that.
Damien.
1976 still holds up.
It holds up.
Those 70 horror movies, just, they get me, you know?
From start to finish, too.
Just like the suspense is just so well done. And
the cursed child trope is just fantastically done here. And executed well.
Yeah. You know, and it's, you know, this one is up there with me for like Exorcist 2. Like they just have that same vibe to
Exorcist
it.
Exorcist 2 is
Exorcist,
bad.
Exorcist T-O-O.
As well.
As well.
As well. Okay.
Oh, Exorcist 2 really bad, but I want to watch it because I watched Exorcist 3 the other day. Oh. I'm really scraping the barrel here, folks.
Yeah.
But yeah, well worth it. And that was on one of the streaming services that I have.
You're drunk with streaming services.
Now that I have, I was like, finally, I found The Omen. Thank God.
Yeah. And, great movie though.
Yeah, so good.
Absolutely
good round up
dynamite.
There. And we're not gonna talk about Bly Manor. You said we'll talk about that later.
We're gonna talk about Bly Manor for the weekend because I have one more episode. But yes. Spoiler alert: it's not good.
Yes.
but we'll get into specifics later. Me, I had a completely different weekend. Oh. Very relaxing because the Eagles, they lost or they won.
Mm.
I lost by watching them win. So I didn't have that agita on a Sunday, but. Something gave me that agita because I was talking to my friends from college and she told me something very disturbing. Mm. And if anyone is a doctor that listens or a nurse or knows anything about this, I have a question. Gavin doesn't know what I'm talking about, Gavin doesn't know what I'm going to talk about here, but it bothered me and she wanted me to bring it up.
Mm.
She told me her whole life, she remembers, this is Courtney, I'm not going to dox her, just Courtney. She remembers her younger brother, Nick, having an Audi belly button.
Oh, God. This and is what you're bringing to the party right now?
This is what I'm
the
bringing
Audi
right
discussion?
Now.
I'm not ready for this, but continue.
No, you're ready for this. She just saw last night that her brother Nick now has an innie belly button.
Oh, my God.
Is this possible to reverse your Audi to an innie? I thought that was a lifetime ailment. I don't know if it's an ailment, but...
I feel like you definitely need to talk to a doctor after
that
happens.
Like, do you need, like, braces? train it to go in?
I could see going from an innie to an Audi just because like your body's expanding or something like that. It needs to make room, like an extra like
in the warm seasons you expand and you get an innie.
It's like a bridge. It's like a bridge.
And then you get an Audi. But I mean she was grilling him and I was like, what was his routine? Was this a regiment that he went through to get this innie? And he goes, no, I don't know, man. I just kept pressing it for a long time.
Oh, golly.
He forced it in and got it. He has an innie now. How weird is that? That's strange, right?
Is very that possible? Strange.
I want to know if he got secret plastic surgery or something or what, okay?
I mean,
I want to know
I can
any
tell
nurse
you this,
that calls
I would if I had an Audi bunny belly button.
It's probably the only elective surgery that I would endorse.
Elective and corrective. That's for sure.
That's correct. Lead is for innies.
Like, I thought you were going to say he had a pierced Audi belly in the Audi belly.
Wow.
Belly
that belly. I mean that's saying it loud and proud.
It's disgusting.
piercing your Audi.
I mean that was just could you even imagine if you have one? I mean my God.
I mean honestly no kink shaming. So if you got an Audi, you got an Audi.
I have like a normal person I should say this. I have an innie belly button. Very proud of it. But I had an appendectomy
you can't get this guy to stop talking about his innie.
I'm really proud. but I had an appendectomy 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And they go in through the belly button, like right at the top of it. And there's like two more. It's laparoscopic. So there's like a few other
two more belly buttons.
They got rid of the second one. Really convenient.
Sad.
Because I'm a twin. Twins have two belly buttons.
I'd like having the spare.
Because I'm a twin and twins have two belly buttons.
That's true. A known fact.
That's true.
That's a known fact.
I absorbed my triplet. I don't want to talk about that right now. But
But you had an appendectomy. They go in. They get rid of your second belly button. What else happened?
Get rid of my third twin. And then so you know, I have like one, two. I probably like four little cuts. Nothing like the long scars of yore. Thank God. Mm-hmm. Because my abs would be destroyed, you know, my
the
six
dark
pack,
ages.
Of course.
Oh yeah, I mean, you wouldn't be able to see those extra two. You'd only have the six and not the eight.
they're somewhere. Anyway, I say all this to say that, like, right above my belly button, where I guess you would get a piercing, that's where they make that cut. So every now and then, if my stomach is ever flat enough and you can really see a little bit more pronounced, I say, and people are like, "Oh, what's that?" I'm like, "Oh, it's just a really bad belly button piercing gone wrong in Myrtle Beach," and people believe me, and I say, "God, no." Did not
I
get this belly button
had a
pierced.
6-inch dangling dolphin that I hung there.
What can I say? Christina Aguilera really got to me as a kid.
I was a genie in my own bottle, and she got me out.
I just wanted to get my belly button pierced.
So, long story short, can you reverse an innie with no surgery? Yeah. Take it away, Gavin.
Yes. Googling it right now.
Don't Google it.
The only thing that comes up, can you reverse the first thing, a vasectomy? God.
Oy,
yes, you can. Yes. Watch out, ladies. All right. Thanks for listening to the pod, y'all. Show us your appreciation by leaving us a review or a voicemail at 803-563-7169. Stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org as well. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Puffing cigars over here. Doing cigars once or twice with the
Doing
boys.
Doing men things.